I try to step out of comfort zones. So the thing that I'm scared of, I'm pushing myself or get pushed, because ultimately this is where growth happens. You need to, in the first 3 seconds, hammer the benefit and your brand, because 80% of the people probably won't watch more than 3 seconds.
Hello and welcome, dear Lightwolf podcast listener. It is a great pleasure to have you on this podcast again today. And it's a particularly great pleasure today because I have here for you and with me a terrific guest who, I promise, will share some great insights, some great learnings about two worlds of leadership. The world of leading brands and the world of leading people. It's my pleasure to welcome you here on the podcast show. Welcome, dear Ilya Werner.
Thank you.
And Ilya worked for 8 years for Procter & Gamble, the company where we both grew up in and did our first years, you 8, I did 16. Company where you were leading brands like Oral-B and Pampers. And you were working in Geneva for Europe. And you also worked in Schwalbach, close to Frankfurt, for the DACH local market. Now you are Vice President Brand for Sixt. Ilya, you so far worked for two strong companies. You worked for Procter & Gamble, and you're now working for Sixt. One of the things that shapes us most and that also influences our success a lot is the culture. So how would you compare the strength, but also the differences between Procter & Gamble and Sixt?
Yeah, maybe first the similarities. And that's why I also moved to Sixt ultimately. Both P&G and Sixt have this eagerness to win. You want to be the best in the market. This mindset of winning. And the second one is brands are number one priority. Even at Sixt, our CFO, COO, CBO, everyone, when they present, they talk about the power of our brand.
Wow.
And that ultimately excited me back then, moving to Sixt. Where they also have a strong similarity that you want to lead and own and win. That there is really like, you have this one topic and you want to push it forward. At P&G, it's kind of like the culture, how you grow up from junior assistant brand manager up. At Sixt, it's the entrepreneurial spirit that was the foundation, how this company and brand grew in the last, just in the last 10 years, doubled the revenue. Mr. Erich Sixt, who took over in the 60s until 2021, built with Regine Sixt, the company from 200 rental cars to 200,000 rental cars.
What?
So
a thousand-fold increase.
Yes.
Boy, that's impressive.
And that's why the bold way of entrepreneurship. Where the difference is? P&G is, I would say, a running machine and system. So you kind of like come in as a junior assistant brand manager and you are in one of the teams, then you get into another ones. The systems are most of the times preformed. And you learn to lead in the system. In a company that grows so massively, and a brand like Sixt, the challenge is sometimes a bit more how you build new systems running, how you build new organizations. And for me, it's a massive challenge because I've learned to operate and lead within a system. And now, like, for example, social media, we've built in the last 4 years from scratch. What kind of people you need? What kind of systems you need. This is purely new. And also how you transform a brand into the modern age. Sixt was always very driven by offline marketing, out of home, airport, print. As the brand and the entire business digitized a lot, we also digitized a lot the brand itself. So we kind of like needed to build it. And this is the major difference where we try to have continuously the same similarities, continuing to build young people into leaders. the best thing, specifically also when you think about social media, the stuff that is happening there that has an impact and is relevant, comes from the teams that work there. Not from me or not from my managers. Like building the right people and nurturing them into leaders who have a vision for the brand and really own their topic. And this is where ultimately a big similarity is. And this is why I loved working at P&G. And now I love the brand Six and the culture there.
Yeah, awesome. Great. On brand, off brand, how do you assess whether something is on brand or off brand for Sixt?
When, like, 4 years ago, we started to modernize the brand because Sixt is growing majorly across the globe. A lot of people work on the brand, so we wanted to articulate the brand that everybody who works in the brand, be it internally or also externally, understands the brand. We looked in the last decades and looked what kind of principles helped to build that, I would say, very iconic brand. And we defined three simple things. Bold: if we do something, we make it to stand out. It needs to hit your face when you walk by. Fun: it needs to drive emotions. It needs to move you. And the last one is premium. Over 60% of cars are premium cars. We're a premium provider. We have a premium positioning. It needs to be a embedded part of our communication. So if we look at on-brand or off-brand, we look at it, is it fun, bold, and premium? If it ticks the boxes, yes. Sometimes things are a bit higher, lower, but this is how we assess ultimately. And until now, it worked well. I think the more a brand works and grows globally, you need to really articulate what the brand stands for and need to educate people. As said earlier, once you produce so many assets, you need to have a clear understanding what your brand is, because ultimately everything what you do either helps or hurts your brand.
Yeah.
And earlier we said also it needs to move. It needs to move you, and it needs to help to move the business.
Yeah.
And this is, I would say, if at least like a couple of those assets hit this, we go ahead with it.
As you just said, the world of marketing and the whole world changed as a result of digitization. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm ready to admit that I grew up, Ilya, I grew up in the world you described before, which when it was all about an inspiring, mind-opening, we called it advertising idea. Mm. So the idea was important then as it is now. And then it was about executing that idea in TV and in print and putting a lot of money behind it. Now, you just said with digitization, and we'll come to talk about another topic that will probably unfold another exponential multiplication yet once more. What are the few things you pay particular attention to when you digitize assets, right? I just realized the brand, it's bold, fun, premium. When you smell, we have a great idea, and you multiply it millions of times into millions of assets. What are the key things that you, as the leader of the brand, apply in assessing and in deciding how to successfully digitize, how to make an idea go viral?
Mm.
How do you do that?
Mm. The first step is always the brand. What do you want to and need to stand for to build that one thing in people's mind? For us, amazing cars for a great price when it comes to rental. How ideas come to life fundamentally changed. Agencies need to rethink. Entire concepts are different now. You need to win the first 3 seconds, the so-called hook. So ideally, you kind of like find ways to hook people in the attention economy that they start engaging with your story. And on organic channels, TikTok or Instagram, it's probably more a hook where you try to be dive into community realities, community insights, what is relevant to them. For example, in the last couple of years, we dove now into gaming. So we try to understand what's relevant to them, dove really into those communities. Ultimately, we've built an entire game where people can play our cars in our fleet in exciting worlds digitally, and people love it. So it's really about when you want to win in digital, the principles have not changed. The consumer is the boss. But you need to take time to dive into it. At P&G, I traveled to Russia, Turkey, UK, and as a 28-year-old, I watched moms changing diapers.
Yeah.
Being with the customer, with the consumer, really, because then you build something, also comes back to feeling your brand. Everything what you do then kind of like goes back. Does your gut say yes or no? So this is the first one, diving into it. Second one, understanding the principles of digital advertising or digital building a brand. Organic works a bit differently versus paid. Organic, you dive more into it, you tell stories, and your brand is just kind of like the platform, but is always part. When it comes to digital advertising, be it on YouTube or also on Meta, you need to, in the first 3 seconds, hammer the benefit and your brand, because 80% of the people probably won't watch more than 3 seconds. So it fundamentally changed. Meaning also when you talk with agencies or when you develop ideas and concepts, you need to have that in mind. And this is where the difference is between strong creatives and strong brand leaders and weak ones that don't reflect a platform. And this is also when you look back how brand building changed. Back then it was the brand building fundamentals, why, who, what, how. And then maybe the one platform. But now it evolved even more stronger in community and customers, brand building fundamentals, the platforms, and now even AI. What does that mean? How do you bring to life an idea on YouTube reflecting the platform principles of ABCD, attention, brand, connection, and direction in the first 3, 4, 5 seconds? So everything needs to come together. Then AI, where are the opportunities, but also where are the boundaries? You have 3 seconds of character consistency when you create videos. So how do you directly, when you think about concepts, integrate those principles, those frameworks, which AI enables you today, into the concepts? And that's, I think, the amazing time of marketing, that there is so much stuff coming together, and ultimately you need to bring it together.
On that notion of AI, which I think is the force that is now launching yet another exponential disruptive growth of many, many things. 2 questions. The first one is, how are you using AI in your business today?
Everywhere. So it comes really from your strategy, where all your customer data is, who do you want to work with? Everything is fueled, organized, analyzed by AI. And not only having dashboards, but directly action and recommendations. I think this is also, then when it comes to creation, we think about where and how we can and should use AI, that ultimately it has a positive impact when it arrives at the customer, and not like, oh, shitty AI, but kind of like still excites. And the third one is in automation. When you think about asset automation, you have one and want to have 10 different banners for it. And then ultimately also the impact. What is the impact? How do you analyze? And ultimately the impact fuels the brand strategy again. So because I have the fuel, the entire value chain, the final impact I have had with this asset will fuel again the brand strategy. Which target group, which asset resonated best with which target group? Do I need to invest more money behind that? So it kind of like it's in every step integrated. And sometimes it works easier, sometimes not. But it's kind of like a new player on your team that helps you to hopefully create more value, better customer insights, better creatives, better activation.
I love it. We also adopted AI into our team. I used the German word KI, and I called her Katja. Katja Immerfroh. And I love your idea, because we'll have a team meeting in coming up in July in Hamburg, a live one, where I will now steal your idea, if I may, just have an empty chair and say Katja. Katja is the new team member on the table all the time. Now, let's shed some light on another duality, balance, coexistence. You will define this between AI and HI, so human intelligence, this relationship between artificial intelligence and humans, right? What I observe in my part of the world is, one, some typically young people, I just spent 3 days with 60 tech entrepreneurs in a tech startup ecosystem called Evoa, right? They are between 19, so even younger than you are, Elia, and in their early 30s, they have a vision. Some are just before founding, some already have founded, have raised their first 5-6 million and their first 20 people on the bus. But they use AI as seamlessly and as naturally as you do. And they might even think ahead. While on the other hand, I also observe people who are scared by AI, who do interpret AI as a threat. They don't know how to use it. They are scared it might just cannibalize and remove their current job. So how do you see that dilemma, that relationship with AI and humans?
And actually, we spoke on the phone when I realized I made a tremendous mistake in leadership a couple of weeks ago. I'm very digital savvy, so I like to test a lot of stuff. I like to test things even before we use it at work. Image creation, video creation, how to leverage that. And what I did wrong in this entire transformation, that I expected too much of people to be there where I am and did not enough stepping back. Okay, where are they? And you once told me leadership is not bringing the people where you are, but going there where the people are.
True.
And after that, we started like doing dedicated sessions, trainings, etc. And that's also kind of like you need to step away how you tick versus other ticks. And this helped me a lot. And interestingly, after we did this and we enabled, and Six is an amazing place for that, because we get equipped with the latest, hottest AI stuff. I think this is where we are miles ahead of other companies where they need to do all that stuff, but everything flows and comes together. And I'm tremendously grateful for that, how we can leverage all those systems. It's the right approach to go ahead. And I need to tell one thing, because I was so amazed. We had a leadership session and Mr. Erich Six, who is already above 80, he presented a case, a vibe-coded app he coded.
What?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, back then he taught himself already like how to code, but now that I think reflects the culture we have at Six, like independently who you are, which impact you have on the business. He's not a CEO anymore, but this showed you need to engage with that stuff, do that. We have dedicated sessions for it. But kind of like going back to our team development, having AI coffees and insight sessions, you saw how the people picked it up, and there was some people were like two steps ahead and said, yeah, I love it. Sometimes we're more a bit scared. But once we kind of like found different formats where they could learn and also share their progress individually in smaller groups, bigger groups, we found a way. And also thankfully people jumped on it. They loved it. They even shared like that they're also thankful for the opportunity to learn it, because it's not given when you look at other organizations. And then step by step, we found ways to leverage it. And that was, again, an aha moment for me of a leadership mistake I did. learned now for the next AI wave, I know better.
Yeah.
It's also fun, and I'm very proud to see what the teams now do, like fully independent AI workflows. It's, I now I'm amazed what stuff comes out there, and I think it's a great reflection of the culture at Sixt, and also the opportunities senior leadership, the entire company gives everyone. And yeah, it's an exciting time.
What a great moment, and compliments to Erich Sixt that with his experience, he learned to code, he learned to do vibe coded applications. That's amazing. I mean, that shows an environment where AI is not only tolerated, but role modeled by the most experienced people in the organization.
Yeah, and like also my two bosses, they're so savvy. It's like scary how savvy they are in that that world. But I do believe that in other organizations, there might be, okay, you guys need to know AI. Mm-hmm. And they do. It's not relevant anymore for me. Mm-hmm. And like really walking that talk is really, really key. And for me, it's also, I want to understand, and via that, hopefully also can guide and work with partners better. When I think about campaigns we bring to life, or other activations, if I talk to agencies and feel they're advanced or less advanced, I try to find the right people who to talk to, because ultimately also as an entrepreneur, and I see myself as an entrepreneur in that company, I want to invest money as best as possible. And if I feel that partners are not on that level or want more money than it actually costs, this is also something we get nurtured by, to really think about where and how the money is invested. So also from a entrepreneurial spirit, it's key that you are top aware, what are the trends, how are things done. And last year when we created a dedicated campaign with AI, which won now a couple of awards, there were two things. One, it was a further development of the brand. And in the early 2000s, there was in Munich airport parking situation, a 4 meter long green cucumber. And there was a headline above it, what is the car of the competition doing here? So kind of like always a gentle reference to our lovely competitors. What did we do last year? I wanted to create something truly, purely AI, but it needed to be on brand and live up to the opportunities that AI offered us. So Jung von Matt came up, we had a briefing session where we specifically looked what are currently the opportunities and barriers. As already said, like, okay, back then it was last year in July, 3 seconds character consistency. So you needed to think about concepts that reflect those principles, that after every 3 seconds you have a new cut in the storytelling. We also didn't want to make the mistakes like other brands did, that kind of like they wanted to communicate in a real way, used AI, and people had 6 hands and all that stuff.
Mm.
So the briefing was either you don't see at all it's AI, or it cannot be anything else than AI.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, and coming from gently talking about our competitors and us, there was this idea that Jung von Matt found, Trustpilot reviews about our competition that read like horror stories, mm-hmm. needed to walk through a dungeon, like etc., all that stuff. So we found 3 different ones. And with AI, within 2 months, we created really Hollywood level ads, 60 seconds, that brought to life those horror reviews about our competition. Amazing. YouTube globally activated, 75% view through rate. The brand was lifted. That was purely possible with AI. Like producing that in the real world would have cost million and would have taken a year. But we specifically looked into it. What are the principles? How do we want to activate? And based on that, it's an amazing video. I need to share all 3 with you.
Please.
And
for my entertainment.
Yes, for your entertainment, exactly. Renting with others is horror, better rent with six. And that's the opportunity. And also like the amazing world of AI, it fundamentally goes back what you mentioned earlier, the idea matters. Everybody can create now and produce and activate, but the difference is a strong and unique idea that comes to life in an exciting way. And that's the beauty of the time now, that way different ideas to bring to life are possible nowadays.
Awesome. This whole conversation makes it visible to me and to everyone who sees it now, how consciously you're developing yourself. It's amazing to listen to your path all the way from a 14-year-old swimmer to your time in P&G, to your time in Sixt now, and how you learn and how you develop yourself. Now, share with us, what are you doing in order to develop yourself further as a leader?
The foundation for me is family. So spending a lot of time with my family, never forgetting who I am and who am I. And there's also another quote from Goethe, the two things parents should give their kids is roots and wings. So that's for me very important. How do I develop as a leader? I try to step out of comfort zones. So the thing that I'm scared of, I'm pushing myself or get pushed, because ultimately this is where growth happens. I love reading. So reading helped me to program my mind into certain structures, certain ways how to cope with situations. I want to grow as a leader to grow leaders. That's for me also understanding, okay, what do I need to do to help other people grow? There's nothing more amazing if there's like something out there which is celebrated by people and it's coming from someone in my team. That's like, I get so excited about that. I love, of course, to be involved, but it's even better if they just did it. Because I think that's key to success in nowadays, do and let do. And this is how I kind of like on the job try to evolve. And let's say the harder and more uncomfortable way of growing as a leader is asking for feedback. So all our people first talks we have quarterly, it's always the same structure. People share about themselves, what they learned, achievements, where they struggle with, where I can help. And then there is always the feedback to me. What do I do well, but specifically, what can I do better? And people are very vocal. So there's a lot of stuff to learn from.
Great compliment to you, because you create openness.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes it's more feedback I receive versus I give. But yeah, that's, I think, like where you try to understand your blind spots. And there are so many mistakes I did in the last years on leadership. There are a few things I hopefully do well to let the people grow. But only via listening and being open to get that feedback, you can understand, okay, is that feedback relevant? I need to act on it. Is it just a personal opinion? But everything I want to hear, and then I decide myself whether to tackle it or not. Yeah. And I think that's the most important one, because ultimately you are in your system, you run, and you cannot always be super self-aware what impact you have. And as you said earlier, you always communicate, even if you don't communicate. So how do you show up? And Dale Coleman wrote this book in Emotional Intelligence.
Yeah.
And where I found very interesting, because emotional intelligence is not like I feel you. It's more like those four quadrants. One, you are in a situation and you have a group. The first one is self-reflected. How do I feel and why do I feel like that? The second one is moderating myself to adapt higher or lower. And then the second two ones are, why is this group feeling like this? And the last one, what do I need to do to adapt the atmosphere to make it more that in the end, the impact of the team is higher. And that's what I found very interesting. And probably I forget most of the times to really do that. Sometimes you do it by yourself because it's a tense situation. I make a joke and it's easier to find your way with it. But this is, I think, a top level of leadership when you feel that people read the room, read the people, and ultimately try to involve the people and find a win-win situation. And this is where I think some people make that very relaxed and you don't even realize it. Sometimes understand, sometimes people disregard that. But that's the true power, how you can move people and find decisions to have a bigger impact with your project.
I love it. Have you experienced people or situations or moments where someone helped someone else to be able to feel, perceive, and live emotional intelligence on a higher level than before?
Can you elaborate a bit more?
Some people I know would probably say about themselves, I feel like I'm pretty good in intellectual intelligence, in thinking, but maybe I'm a bit underdeveloped in emotional intelligence. I just thought about a man running a big country in the world right now who I think is very underdeveloped on this side. And it's a difficult question I'm raising. And maybe the answer is no, maybe you have not perceived anyone, but I'd like to learn from you, like the audience would like to learn from you. Have you ever seen a person, have you experienced a moment where someone helped someone else to be more emotionally intelligent? Building on the book from Daniel Coleman, I'm reflecting myself as I'm asking the question. And I have two particular people in mind who I'm working with right now, very closely, who would benefit from the answer. How can you at all develop emotional intelligence in others?
What pops in my mind now are situations where you feel in a huge crowd, where maybe new leaders are in and have potentially a too high, I don't say too high respect, but they are kind of like intimidated by hierarchy, where people help them to still shine, to give them maybe an intro or a platform they felt comfortable talking about, because that specific person read the room, okay? She right now is intimidated by the hierarchy of those higher management people, and that person helps her or him to understand, okay, she led that, she achieved that, she achieved this entire campaign. So kind of like building already credibility for her to have a better impact in the meeting. This is maybe something where I saw at many meetings, or also what I try to learn and also do, because this is kind of like where growth happens. Reading the room, okay, what kind of vibe is in here, and still that person who presents has the confidence to deliver. This is maybe, I don't have a specific point in my mind, but this direction could go in that.
I agree, and I like the example a lot. Thanks for sharing. Now, towards closing the conversation, I have two more things for you, two sets of questions. The first one is five quick questions, with the ask to also give me quick answers, and then a final one to close the call. So let's go. What is the best piece of advice you ever received?
I think it's from my dad, and he said it, you just need to talk to people. And that opened so many doors for my life, and ultimately also independently who you meet, be the CEO or someone who cleans up, everybody deserves the same respect. And the upside of it, I respect everyone in the same level, so I don't feel intimidated by hierarchy. I still treat them in the same way, not disrespectful, but in the same way. And this helps me also to speak more open about my ideas and my beliefs.
Yeah, thank you. Which leadership quality is most important to you?
Honesty.
What is your personal go-to tool when things become stressful?
Sports, going running, sauna opens my mind.
Which book, podcast, or quote recently inspired you?
Recent book, I reread The Alchemist, where I love the journey of having the dreams and being in that moment. And once you're in that moment, making the best. Which book shaped me probably most was The Obstacle Becomes the Way by Ryan Holiday. He transforms the ancient stoicism into modernity. And that kind of like also opened up the entire world from Marcus Aurelius of meditation. So diving into the stoicism, accepting what you cannot change and focusing on what you can change. And that helped me a lot guiding my thinking and action.
And if you could change one thing about the world of work tomorrow, what would it be?
Probably a bit being okay and open talking about dedication and also hard work. Not our work, but hard work. That it's okay to talk about, I worked on this on the weekend, I love it, I want to go into it. This is right now still a sensitive topic, and I would love that like really dedication and putting the right hours into it are more appreciated and celebrated. This is something I believe our society and also economy would benefit from.
Yeah. Big story, big topic. Thank you. Yeah. So there is thousands of people on the call, and I would like you to close it with either a message to them or with a question you would like to leave them with.
You have probably many, many big dogs in your audience. And it's maybe a question or an ask. Think about when you did the last time or when you will in the future give younger talents more freedom, more trust, more opportunities to help to shape the world and let them make mistakes. And yeah, catch them again in growing, because I think this is what I received a lot in my journey. This is where I grew, and this is what I want to pass on. And I think in many organizations, there can be a bit more of that.
Awesome. So a question that any leader, more junior than you, more experienced than you, has a chance now to think about. And maybe one final question to you that popped up right now. How much time do you spend reflecting?
I started in COVID times meditation.
Yeah.
So I try to sit every day between 5 and 10 minutes. Before I had a child, it was in the morning. Now it's more like in the evening times. So meditation is a kind of way of reflecting, but specifically also what I'm thankful for. Like I try to... If you focus on the good will grow. And this is what I try to do a lot, focusing more on things I'm very happy and grateful for, even in tougher times. So most of the times daily.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, dear Lia. So a couple of things I take away from this as key takeaways. The first one, how you define the brand Sixt. Bold, fun, premium. The second one I take away is your core of leadership, honesty. And the last one is how you reflect. You take the time, you found your method, it includes meditation, you invest the time into thinking, which too many people, more and more people right now feel they don't have the time anymore, which I think with all due respect is nonsense. We all have the same amount of time. We have 24 hours a day. The question is what we invested into and what we don't. I love the way how you found your way to reflect. And in concluding, in the name of all those people listening and watching, it's been a true pleasure, Ilya, to have you on this show and to listen to you, to learn from you, to learn with you. It's an amazing path you have behind you, and I'm sure there is an even more amazing path for you ahead. Thank you very much, dear Ilya.
Thanks for taking the time, because it's also your time, and you helped me a lot also in the last years to grow, to come from P&G into a new culture that takes work, and also reflection and the talks we had always helped me. So thanks a lot for that.
My pleasure. See you soon. Thank you, Ilya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.